Hi, you're listening to Truth News Radio Australia on the 2nd of August 2012. Welcome to another show, ladies and gentlemen. My name's Herewood Fenton. It is great to be able to talk to you today, to bring the information that I have to you wherever you may be, whether you're in your car, whether you're in Oklahoma City, or whether you're in Sydney, or whether you're in Vladivostok, picking us up on the internet stream. You're most welcome to join and you're most welcome to contribute, and I'll be giving you the numbers that you can call if you'd like to join in the conversation. Truth News Radio Australia is a very much a homegrown, a grassroots effort, and we have a lot to do, a lot of work, and it's not easy, but I feel that we're doing something that's important, and a lot of our listeners, I think, agree. And today is certainly no exception, because I'm actually bringing you a story that is very much current, very much a breaking story, and very much one of those things that you're not going to find in the mainstream at all, because the mainstream media is going to bury this one, because they're actually afraid of it. It's a very embarrassing story for the global media cartels. Now, what's it all about? Well, it's all about climate change, and it's all about the huge media furore over the recent release of a report led by a Professor Richard Muller from University of Berkeley, California. Now, the reason why I'm saying that this is actually a major embarrassment for the mainstream media is actually a rather complex story that I'm going to have to unfold for you. Firstly, let's just refer to the information that we have to hand. The Sydney Morning Herald, which is one of our leading newspapers here in Australia, published an article just a couple of days ago, which was a reprint of a story that was in the New York Times. Now, the title of the story, as published in the Sydney Morning Herald, is How I Saw Past the Hot Air on Climate. And it is by Richard Muller. And it is actually a reprint of a story which was in the New York Times, which I believe went under the title The Conversion of a Climate Change Skeptic. So I'm actually going to read to you a little bit from this article, and then I'm going to deconstruct it for you and walk you through the scandal that is now brewing over it. This is by Richard Muller, Professor of Physics at University of Berkeley, California. Call me a converted skeptic. 3 years ago, I identified problems in previous climate studies that, in my mind, threw doubt on the very existence of global warming. Last year, following an intensive research effort involving a dozen scientists, I concluded that global warming was real and that the prior estimates of the rate of warming were correct. And I'm now going a step further. Humans are almost entirely the cause. My turnaround in such a short time is the result of careful and objective analysis by the Berkeley Earth Surface Temperature Project, which I founded with my daughter Elizabeth. Our results show that the average temperature of the Earth's land has risen by 2.5 degrees Fahrenheit over the past 250 years, including an increase of 1.5 degrees over the most recent 50 years. Moreover, it appears likely that essentially all this increase results from the human emission of greenhouse gases. These findings are stronger than those of the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, and in its 2007 report, the IPCC concluded only that most of the global warming of the past 50 years could be attributed to humans. Richard Muller is now saying in this article that it appears that all of the warming of the last 50 years is due to human emission of greenhouse gases. Okay, now this story went on to the New York Times, as I said. It was also on The Guardian. It was also here in the Sydney Morning Herald. And it was much touted as the final sort of nail in the coffin of climate skeptics, because here was a climate skeptic himself who changed his mind after doing the proper science and finding the correct information. And to a lot of people who will casually come across this, whether they'll see it on the news or they'll read something in the paper, they'll believe it because, it, you know, on face value, that's what it appears to show. And yet every part of it, just about every part of this story, of this subject that's covered here, is actually false. And I mean, let's actually just start with the simplest parts of it. Let's talk about the conversion of a climate change skeptic. It turns out that Richard Muller was never actually a climate change skeptic, and I've got quotes that indicate that he was quite on side with the main thrust of climate change, in actually endorsing the work of Al Gore, and even saying that if it's not totally correct, it's still a good thing because it makes people believe, and that believing is a good thing. He's actually quoted as saying something along those lines. The presentation of the article, where it says, you know, he's been converted, again, is a completely unscientific way of expressing information. A real scientist wouldn't talk about being converted. That's actually a religious terminology. And I'm going to get into that with our guest who'll be coming on in about 25 minutes, Malcolm Roberts, because this question of whether a scientist can and should use this type of terminology, because really scientists should only be dealing with facts, and scientists should always remain skeptical. They can change their viewpoint, but you don't go from being a skeptic to a believer. That's not a scientific approach at all. You stay skeptical. What happens is new evidence comes in and the evidence says a different thing. But what we are looking here, what we are actually seeing here, is a very sophisticated PR kind of stunt, because the average person, the general population, is very much influenced by political and religious, I guess, terminology that really it speaks to a much deeper level in our psyche. When we talk about someone being converted, it really is ecclesiastical, and it really is there's a word for it, and I'm going to get that word for you in the next segment when I get Georges on, who's an expert in these matters. But for now, let me just move on to actually talk a little more about what his discoveries actually indicate. Now, he's actually supposedly discovered that the Earth warmed in the past 250 years. And, you know, guess what? We all agree on that. We all agree. All the skeptics agree that the Earth has warmed in the last 250 years. Now, Richard Muller is saying that the Earth warmed by 2.5 degrees Fahrenheit. Now, remember, he's using Fahrenheit, and this can be a little bit confusing because most people, in fact, I think in just about every other scholarly article I've ever read, they do not use Fahrenheit. Fahrenheit is a temperature measurement that is used in the US, but it is not used in science. But when you hear 2.5 degrees, you're going to compare that to probably what you've heard before and what you've heard the skeptics saying, maybe 1.5 degrees. And you're going to say, oh my goodness, it's a lot more than what we thought. No, it's not, ladies and gentlemen. 2.5 degrees Fahrenheit is 1.5 degrees centigrade. Okay, that's the first outright deception, I think, in this article, is that they've deliberately put Fahrenheit in when most people use centigrade. And of course, Fahrenheit is a larger measure of temperature. So 2.5 degrees Fahrenheit is 1.5 degrees centigrade. Now, in the last 250 years, the temperature has gone up 1.5 degrees Fahrenheit. Well, guess what? I don't even need to dispute that. Christopher Monckton hasn't disputed that. Some scientists may dispute that, of course. You know, the actual numbers are always a subject of debate. But let's just accept it for now. Let's accept the 1.5. We know that 250 years ago, the Earth was in the middle of what's called the Little Ice Age. It was a period of extreme cold, which had followed the earlier medieval warm period. Now, ladies and gentlemen, I'm just a little bit distracted at the moment because I've changed my studio setup. Sorry, I'm just checking my timing here. So, as we've said, the temperature has warmed clearly in the last 250 years, and it was, by comparison to today, extremely cold back at that time, 250 years ago, in the sort of around about 1750. The River Thames regularly froze over. There were terrible famines. There were terrible food shortages. It was a really, really bad time. Now, of course, 300 years before that, the medieval warm period was much, much warmer. There were grapes being grown in England. There was farming in Greenland. So we know it was a lot warmer then, and then we know that it cooled down, and we know that it warmed up. And this, my friends, is why climate skeptics who really do adhere to the facts and really look at the evidence have said that the warming trend we've seen in the last century, particularly in the last 50 years, is not outside of the normal variability. It is just part, very much within the variability of the patterns that we've seen for at least 1,000 years. But let's go back further. I mean, there was a Roman warming period, which again was as warm as the medieval warming period. And there was an earlier warming period called the Bronze Age warming, which is believed to be warmer than either the medieval warm period or today. It was much, much warmer. And this was in about 5000 BC. Now, of course, when you talk about periods of warming and cooling, it's critical that you have the time perspective, because the time perspective is everything. That's essential. When we zoom back out, when we zoom out to a larger view, the variations that we see within, say, the last 500,000 years shrink to nothing, and we actually see much larger variations, and they're like the major glaciations. And, you know, as we look back at that larger view, we see that the whole world was much, much colder from about 12,000 years ago, and that there have been these periods of deep freeze, you know, glaciation, that have lasted vast periods of time, or relatively long periods of time, followed by short periods of warming, which the whole of the last 10,000 years is actually a period of warming. I will continue with this after the break. I'm going to move through the story here about Richard Muller, and I'm going to expose it all to you with Truth News. Getting fed up with all the disinformation, deception, spin, propaganda, half-truths and downright lies in mainstream news? Looking for something different? Visit Truth News Radio Australia, www.truthnews.com.au, and may the truth set you free. Welcome back. You're listening to Truth News Radio Australia. It's great to have your company today. My name's Herewood Fenton, and I'm currently joined in studio by the Honourable George Georges, who joins me from the studio. Unfortunately, he's shielded from me by a screen that has been put up to improve my acoustics here. And one of the side effects is that I cannot see George, but he's there in the room with me. George, welcome.
Thank you very much. I don't know if it's an advantage or disadvantage at being screened, but anyway, we'll see what happens.
Well, I can kind of ask you, it's kind of like what the Scientologists do. I don't know if you've ever been involved in Scientology, George, but
no.
when they ask you questions, they take you into a little space and you sit behind a booth and you can't see anything, and they ask you questions.
That's similar to the auditing in the Scientology and confessional in the Catholic Church, I think.
Yes, the difference being that they hook you up to a little device that measures your skin conductivity. It's kind of like a lie detector test.
Uh-huh.
So we might actually try that with you, but not in this show. Anyway, look, allow me, if I may, George, to continue where I left off in the last segment there, because I was going through this scandal over Richard Mueller. Now, listeners may not yet quite understand why I'm carrying on about this, but believe me, it will be made clear. So, look, there is some excellent commentary on the best study, as it's called, which you can find if you go to joannenova.com.au. There's a number of links there, and if you go to whatsupwiththat.com, you'll actually find an excellent new study that Anthony Watts has released that actually reconfirms what he's been saying all along, which is that the temperature measurement stations are faulty right across the US. That basically they are elevating temperature readings by a significant factor due to the placement of the thermometers, you know, near air conditioners, near parking lots, all this kind of stuff. Now, Anthony Watts has actually just released his study just in the wake of Richard Mueller releasing his so-called study. But here's where it gets really, really twisted. It turns out, and this only came to light in the last 2 days, in fact, I think it was just yesterday, that it turns out that Richard Mueller's group tried twice to submit a paper to a journal, and it's a journal called the Journal of Geophysical Research. And when they first submitted the paper, it was rejected. And the man who rejected it, Ross McKittrick, rejected it on methodological grounds and quite serious flaws in the way the paper was written, saying that basically the conclusions that the paper draws are not supported by the evidence in the research. And it was rejected. The paper was then resubmitted, and it was rejected again. Now, this information only came to light in the last couple of days, but the paper itself has been talked about since about last September. I mean, I heard it in the news. Everyone was talking about it. And I do remember briefly hearing that it hadn't actually been published yet, but you sort of give them a benefit of the doubt and you think, oh, well, sometimes they release the story before it's published. Well, in this case, no. What they did was they went to publish it. It was rejected. And they said, well, to hell with it. We're just going to publish it in the mainstream media, right? Anyway, even though it's been rejected. In other words, this is actually not a scientifically credible paper, but we're just going to release it because we know that the big news outlets are going to suck this up. They're going to love it, and they're not going to care too much that it basically didn't pass peer review. And it turned out that the reviewer, Ross McKittrick, was bound by confidentiality agreements as a reviewer of the peer review. He wasn't even allowed to speak about it. He wasn't allowed, due to those confidentiality agreements, he wasn't allowed to actually speak out and say, hey, by the way, this paper didn't pass peer review. So this is actually now we're moving into a complete deception. I call it fraud on the general public to present bogus scientific research with the imprint of the respectability of a university and a professor, making everyone think that this is actually so incredibly credible and squeaky clean. Georges, what is your take on this horrendous new scandal?
Reminds me of Dr. McBride many years ago, who actually was one of the leading scientists who found the connection between thalidomide, an approved pharmaceutical, and child deformities. In Australia, we suffered some 10 to 12,000 deformities in children. There are some 130 in court at the moment with a class action against the manufacturer in Germany. But it reminds me of that situation. McBride was subsequently accused of this strange thing called scientific fraud. So I went diving around the place to find what was scientific fraud. So there was no answer come forward there, but in this Mueller situation now, I can definitely see aspects of what we might term scientific fraud, where a conclusion is required or has been agreed to, and we move backwards from that to find the substantive evidence. So it is a fraud in many ways. I'm a bit disappointed with the newspapers who did run the initial story without checking a little bit more firmly, but they're looking for headline grabs.
And let me just, I've actually got the newspaper here, and let me point out that it was pulled from the Sydney Morning Herald. It was published online and in the newspaper. They've now removed it from online, I think because they know it's an embarrassment. In the newspaper, it was a huge spread, and it's on page 11 of Tuesday, July 31, 2012, Sydney Morning Herald, and it has a big kind of cartoon image here of a man holding a megaphone with the word skeptic written on it, and the megaphone is kind of melting. This is some kind of, you know, cartoonist's representation of the fact that, you know, I used to be a skeptic, now the light of truth has made my megaphone melt, which again is a kind of metaphor for global warming itself, proving that the skeptic was wrong. And of course, the thrust of the article is that I used to be a skeptic, now I've been converted.
Yes, it's unfortunate that used to be, we used to call PR, public relations, is now in the spin industry. So PR is a polite term of the spin industry. And we would also forget that behind these interests are major banking cabals around the world. There are political interests, economic interests, concerned with global warming. It isn't the government doing it right for us. There are a lot of other interests involved. And certainly, as we saw in the statue coming down and in Baghdad of Saddam Hussein, where a PR company in New York finally admitted it wasn't a great job we did there, we can see PR fingerprints on a lot of these aspects of global warming. And that's really a shame, because you vote for governments and you expect, certainly expect a reasonable standard of health, education and welfare, and they're not delivered to the degrees that would be reasonably expected in our free democratic societies. And funds and resources are wasted in other areas to bring us along in a particular mind step or to into a lockstep that's required for other economic or political reasons. I wrote an interesting piece, and I said it's the climate change is where junk science intersects with junk economics at a user-friendly point, but unfortunately, it's not user-friendly for the average person. It's user-friendly for elitist groups or political interests or banking consortia that are very much at a distance from the people themselves.
So, what do you think we should do, George? I mean, what message would you like to send to the good citizens of this country? I mean, do we just sit back and suck it up?
Well,
or do we march in the street? Do we just basically lynch right. the people in control of this ridiculous situation? What do we do? I mean, I don't advocate violence.
Well,
I'm just saying, like, what you tell me what we do.
Well, we can't wheel out the guillotine of France, that's for sure. We've passed through that stage. But it's unfortunate that these things take place. Now, for example, if the reality of 9/11 was brought forward, the NIST report was stepped aside, there was a proper investigation, that whole thing was reviewed in a completely different light and taken away, then whatever occurred as a result of that, the notion of terrorism, the restrictive freedoms, everything else that happened as a result of that wouldn't change. So if the climate change logic was taken away, there'd still be other areas. In Australia, for example, when the climate change tax was introduced here, there was some political dissent concerning the costs to families over the space of a year. So the government here granted small $160, $170 grants over the year to families and to certain George, individuals.
George, apologies, I'm going to have to pause you there. We're going to break, and after the break we have an interview with Malcolm Roberts of the Galileo Movement, really, really important interview. And I'll just issue a disclaimer there when I said about lynching. You know, that's just my expression of frustration. That's certainly nothing about the way I think about the world. You know, I believe in democracy, and I believe that the revolution can come peacefully. It's just my frustration. And I really am frustrated and angry, and I think it's important to express that. You're with Truth News Radio Australia. Welcome back. You're with Truth News. I have on the line Malcolm Roberts, who is director of the Galileo Movement. Galileo Movement was started here in Australia with the group who brought Lord Monckton out to speak back in 2010. And that was such a successful tour that you know, so many people were kind of woken up, and so many people came to the speaking events all around the country that the people who organized that started a movement, and it's called the Galileo Movement, based with the ideas of Galileo challenging the dogmas of the church as its fundamental sort of concept, that we have to really break through dogma and we have to understand the value of science. So I'd just like to say a warm welcome to Malcolm Roberts to Truth News Radio.
Good morning, Harrowood, and welcome to your listeners too.
Thanks very much. Great to have you aboard. Now, Malcolm, I'd like to read to you a recent posting from a peer reviewer, Ross McKittrick, who was a reviewer for the Journal of Geophysical Research. And I just want to read out something that he posted on his website just a couple of days ago. And this, of course, all in relation to the scandal over Richard Muller, the question about whether, A, he was ever really a skeptic, which is a very important one, because it's, again, a question of truth and accuracy. Was Richard Muller a skeptic and then a converted skeptic? I'd like to address that, but also the question of the quality of his science, which I've been talking about already on the show today. Now, it says here, Berkeley Earth Study referee reports. On the 8th of September 2011, I was asked by Journal of Geophysical Research to be a reviewer for a paper by Charlotte Wickham et al. Presenting the Berkeley Earth surface temperature analysis of the effect of urbanization on land surface temperatures. This work is mainly associated with Richard Muller and his various co-authors. I submitted my review just before the end of September 2011, outlining what I saw were serious shortcomings in their methods and arguing that their analysis does not establish valid grounds for the conclusions they assert. I suggested the authors be asked to undertake a major revision. In October 2011, despite the papers not being accepted, Richard Muller launched a major international publicity blitz announcing the results of the BEST project, as it was called. That stands for Berkeley Earth Surface Temperature. I wrote to him and his co-author Judy Curry objecting to the promotional initiative, since the critical comments of people like me were locked up under confidentiality rules and the paper had not been accepted for publication. Now, just moving on a bit through this post here, it says, on March 8, 2012, I was asked again by JGR to review a revised version of the same paper. I submitted my review at the end of March. The authors had made very few changes and had not addressed any of the methodological problems, so I recommended the paper not be published. I do not know what the journal's decision was, but it is 4 months later and I can find no evidence on the BEST website that this or any other BEST project paper has been accepted for publication. And there is an update here on July 30th that says, JGR has told me the paper was rejected and the editor recommended that the author resubmit it as a new paper. Despite that, he goes on to say, Richard Muller launched another publicity blitz claiming, among other things, that in our papers we demonstrate that none of these potentially troublesome effects, including those related to urbanisation and land surface changes, unduly biased our conclusions. Their failure to provide a proper demonstration of this point had led me to recommend against publishing their paper. So he's saying that the original methodological problems were there. They were in two versions of the paper which submitted, and those were the specific reasons why the paper was rejected. And yet here is Richard Muller in major international publications, the New York Times, the Guardian, the Sydney Morning Herald here in Australia, basically touting this paper, which was peer rejected. And he's basically saying, I take the journal peer review process seriously, and I dislike being placed in the position of having to break a commitment I made to JGR. But the BEST team decision to launch another publicity blitz effectively nullifies any right they might have had to confidentiality. So on top of all that, he's been gagged from speaking out all this time, so we haven't had the privilege of knowing. This just seems to me an incredible scandal. What's your take on this, Malcolm Roberts?
I've got no doubt. My conclusion is that it's a scandal. I think what's happening, Herowood, is that as the global warming fraud is collapsing around the IPCC, the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, which has been the chief fraudster in this, aided and abetted by Al Gore, and they both shared a Nobel Peace Prize. And it's significant that they shared the Peace Prize because that is awarded by a political process. It's significant that they did not get a science prize.
Right.
A science prize is awarded by peers in the science involved. Now, the whole thing is a fraud, global warming. And what we have here is the IPCC being smashed. It's been completely discredited, its 2007 report, processes and procedures used to develop that report, by the Inter-Academy Council. That's the peak body of the science organizations from around the world, the various national science organizations. So the IPCC has been absolutely exposed. And now what they're doing, the political campaign behind this, is looking for other people that they can try and use.
Right.
That's my conclusion. Now, Muller, Richard Muller, is painted as a skeptic. He is hardly a skeptic. He has... as you can see here, he has looked like he's bypassed the peer review process and has gone on and made the claims that are just not supported by his own paper. His own co-author in the earlier release last year, Judith Curry, has said that his claim about carbon dioxide causing the warming that he claims is unfounded. So this guy is making unfounded claims, and that proves he's not a skeptic. A skeptic is the first response. Skepticism is the first response of a good scientist, because until you can prove me that with empirical evidence that your theory is correct, I remain a skeptic. My role then is to challenge you. My duty and responsibility is to challenge you. And once you provide me with suitable evidence, then I convert my skepticism into agreement and we endorse your theory. Now, Muller has started off, it seems, with a biased approach. His research apparently was aimed at proving warming. That's where I read somewhere. Aimed at proving warming. I thought it would be to investigate climate and temperature. So that's the first thing. The second thing is he's made a leap in faith on his belief that carbon dioxide drove temperature, and it does not. It's the reverse. We now know empirically that temperature drives carbon dioxide. There's the second reason why he's not a skeptic. The third reason is his bypassing of the peer review process, and he just shows no regard for the science from what I can see, and he's just coming back. And what we've seen here is typical global warming campaigning. We've seen a bypassing of the science, a dishonest claiming of the science while it contradicts empirical science, and we see massive publicity. And here we've seen very cleverly him painted as a skeptic, and the news in the media is, my goodness, we'll have to agree now because the skeptics now agree. And that is completely wrong. And perhaps we could talk more about your second point, questioning his science later, but he is not a skeptic.
Absolutely. And I've got a quote here from 2008. And this I picked this up just from a blog today. I don't know about its accuracy, but it says here, if Al Gore reaches more people and convinces the world that global warming is real, even if he does it through exaggeration and distortion, which he does, but he's very effective at it, then let him fly any plane he wants. Now, that purportedly is a quote from Richard Muller from 2008. And that certainly doesn't sound like even the, it doesn't sound like the mentality of a skeptic, does it? I mean, a person, a true skeptic would never say something like that, because it's almost giving value to unsubstantiated, politicized dogma or rhetoric, which again is against what skepticism is all about. And I think another interesting point, Malcolm, is that in the title of the article, which was published in the New York Times, the title of the article says the conversion of a climate change skeptic. And I mean, we could really analyze the language here, because the word conversion implies a religious element, doesn't it?
It does. But I think for the average guy in the street, that's a very good point, actually, that you raised, because, you know, we have two ways of trying to understand the world around us, nature, if you like, the planet. One is called religion, and that's not to disparage it, because there are certain things that we just don't know.
Malcolm, we're just going to break. We'll be right back after the break. Thanks very much. You're with Truth News Radio Australia. Please stay with us. Hi, welcome back. You're with Truth News Radio Australia. My name's Herewood Fenton, and today I'm speaking to Malcolm Roberts of the Galileo Movement, and we're talking about Professor Richard Muller and the BEST study, the Berkeley Earth Sciences Project, which has been touted in the media here in major newspapers and around the world as being final proof that the skeptics are wrong, because it has the title of it, well, at least the article that was published in the New York Times, the title of it was The Conversion of a Climate Change Skeptic. There was an article which was also published here in the Sydney Morning Herald, and I just have that in front of me today. It was actually pulled from their website, which is another interesting point that we might discuss. The title of the article that was published in the Sydney Morning Herald is How I Saw Past the Hot Air on Climate. And that was a huge, almost full-page spread in the Sydney Morning Herald on July 31. Anyway, Malcolm, you were just explaining there about Richard Muller and what defines a real scientist.
Yes, and before I continue with that, Herewood, I just need to make clear that I'm not a director at the Galileo Movement. I'm the project leader, and I'm a voluntary. Every one of us is a volunteer. Secondly, okay, we're not associated with Lord Monckton. We certainly don't mind being associated with him, but the truth is we are not associated with him. The founders of the Galileo Movement were the organisers of Lord Monckton's, or Viscount Monckton's, first tour, which was in 2010, I think, February. And they were so appalled at the lack of coverage from the mainstream media, especially the government's propaganda arm, the Australian Broadcasting Corporation, that they realised that they needed to go out and see if they could get something done about the media. So that's why the Galileo movement was formed, to restore scientific integrity.
Great. Thanks very much for clarifying that. Yeah, I picked that up off the website there somewhere. But obviously, Christopher Monckton is a very eloquent speaker. Some people do have, you know, questions about him in various ways. That's really not the point, though, is it? We're not allying ourselves with any individual personality. We're just trying to ally ourselves with science and provable facts.
Well said, Harold. That's yeah. Right on. Now, yeah. That takes us back to the point that we were discussing, religion or science. You know, humans are blessed with inherent care for the planet and inherent care for each other. We all have our little faults that distract us from that and cause pain to ourselves and others. And we have the Hitlers of the world. But essentially, humans care for the planet and they care for each other. And they care for all living creatures. We are inherently caring. We're inherently loving. We can be taken away from that by our ego, but nonetheless, we're inherently loving. And we're also inquisitive. We're very, very creative. And we have the capacity for rational thought, unlike any other species on the planet. And that causes us some grief as well as enormous benefits. But that rational thought, combined with our inherent connection with the earth and with the universe and the spirit that drives all, that leads us to want to question, and we ask the basic questions. Who am I? What am I doing here? Who created me? How did it all happen? Who created the whole lot? And there are valid reasons why religion, meditation, prayer can give us some answers, but they can also be hijacked by people and push their own dogma, because ultimately religion is about faith. And that's not to discredit that, because it's extremely important to have faith about certain things. But it does not give us the answers on the material aspects. So the scientific process was developed a few hundred years ago. And that enabled us to have objectivity. And we have to go through things logically. So there's a scientific rationale, a logical reasoning behind something to identify cause and effect and associations. And there's also the reliance on empirical data, hard observation, measurement that is repeatable, not just once off, but repeatable. And so science then brings about objectivity, recognizing, though, that there are many areas where science cannot give us answers yet. But science is very, very important, because although religion aims to free people up, it can be overtaken by dogma. And science is completely devoid of dogma if it's done properly. And that right. Science is so important then, because it gives us our freedom. And instead of being ruled by the dogma, by the bully, by the loudest voice, the wealthiest voice, the most powerful voice, the man with or the woman with the biggest gun, we are ruled by rational thinking. So this is about dogma, this Müller approach. There's a lack of empirical science to back up any of his claims, either the core claim about temperature or his claim about human carbon dioxide. It is nonsense. It is dogma. It is not science.
Yeah, and, you know, if you read the article, there's really nothing in there that you can glean from it other than you basically have to trust him. He's sort of saying, well, I'm an expert. Trust me. You read it like he's just sort of – he's telling you what the study tells you. Like, he's not really giving you any facts you can chew on other than his assessment and you know, generalizations. But he starts at the very first line of the article, says, call me a converted skeptic. And it's really interesting, isn't it? Because can a skeptic be converted? I mean, if you're a skeptic, to be a skeptic, you can change your opinion on things, but you don't become converted. It's maybe a fine point, but it's an important one, because a skeptic will take in new evidence and change his or her opinion based on the evidence. But a skeptic will not be converted out of becoming a skeptic. It just doesn't make any sense to me.
That is an outstanding point, Harold. I hadn't thought of that. And you raise something very, very important. The key message in most articles is the first few lines and the last few lines. And apart from some pictures in between, maybe the key message here is, even the skeptics are now joining the bandwagon.
That seems to be it.
False.
That seems to be it. And it feels like a PR stunt. It feels like this was almost scripted. It really doesn't. It doesn't come across as the sort of thing a scientist would write. It comes across as the sort of thing a PR expert would concoct.
And the language all the way through this global warming fraud is aimed at spinning things and misleading people and doing it very, very nicely. And the other aim there is to discredit and deter anyone who disagrees. Now, Al Gore, we can do an analysis of Al Gore's movie at some time if you like. It is an amazing piece of propaganda screwed together by Hollywood. And what he does in there, he doesn't say it directly, but he implies it repeatedly and very, very strongly, but subtly, that if you disagree with me, you are either corrupt, taking bribes from big oil companies, you are dishonest, you are using the old science, you are corrupt in that you don't understand the science. And he does it very subtly. And what they're doing with the language is they're using that to move people into a position where people think, I better not take on that view. I'll be painted as evil, or I'll be painted as one of the minority. And humans love to belong, Harrowood. And
yeah.
We love to connect with each other. And so many of us are afraid of standing up, because we might be excluded. And so that search for approval, that search for belonging is manipulated by these people. And something even more sinister in their propaganda is that they manipulate fear and guilt. And they completely distort the reality of human behavior as loving, caring, and creative. And they take the Malthusian approach, which completely contradicts the phenomenal improvements in just about every aspect of our life today. And they are putting humans down. They are anti-human. And they do it very, very subtly by claiming they care and we don't. And the irony, when you look behind it and through all the words, is that they are essentially saying, humans don't care, but I know you do, and therefore you'll get on board. And that is dishonest. It is deceitful. And we need to beat deceit and return humanity, not insanity.
Thanks for that, Malcolm. And I'd just like to say, you know, I saw some of your speech. I actually videoed the entire set of speeches from the first large protest that was held here in Hyde Park in Sydney. And you were quite inspiring up there on the stage. Actually, we haven't really had anything quite as big as that, unfortunately. I think sometimes what happens with protest movements is that when it starts, you have all this enthusiasm and people join, and then after a year or two, they see things aren't changing and it starts to thin out again. I mean, we certainly saw that with the anti-war protests during the Iraq War, where we had this huge outpouring and then it virtually dissipated after 3 years. I'm not saying that's happening to the anti-carbon tax movement, but there is this tendency. What do you think about that? How are we going to deal with that?
Well, the last Hyde Park rally, it started in Hyde Park on July 1st, the date that carbon dioxide tax was introduced. And it's not a carbon tax, it's a carbon dioxide tax leading into a carbon dioxide trading scheme, and where the big banksters are going to be able to basically create a new currency out of thin air. But anyway, we had a rally in Hyde Park. We assembled in Hyde Park, and then we marched down Elizabeth Street under the railway into Belmore Park, where the crowd was addressed. And we would have had some estimates say 4,000 to 5,000 people, and they were very, very strong. And our original slogan, if you like, to rally people in the Galileo movement was "Axe the Tax." And once the tax came in, we recognized we had to change our slogan.
Great. Unfortunately, we don't have a lot of time today to speak. I'd love to get you back on the show again soon. I'm glad to hear that that the movement is still strong. Obviously, we've got a government just doing everything they can to water down people's concerns with tax handouts, etc. Malcolm Roberts, thank you very much for coming on Truth News today.
You're welcome. I look forward to joining you again.
Great, thanks very much. Okay, we're just going to break. You're with Truth News Radio Australia. Please stay with us. We've got another hour of news and analysis coming up.